From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, part three of Fumed.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The nonprofit newsroom Public Health Watch has produced an investigative podcast called Fumed. It's about Channelview, an unincorporated community outside of Houston in the heart of America's petrochemical industry, and two residents who've challenged the powerful companies that are taking over their once peaceful neighborhood. And now here's episode three of Fumed by Public Health Watch.
April of 2007 was a typical spring in Southeast Texas. Blue bonnets, the state flower, painted streaks of color on pastures and roadside knolls. People soaked up as much time outside as they could before the punishing summer heat arrived. In Channelview, however, nature's gifts were overshadowed by a frenzy of petrochemical activity. The Riverside community's transformation into an industrial hotbed was speeding up. The changes were dramatic in South Channelview. Homes on the banks of the San Jacinto River were being replaced by storage facilities filled with hazardous materials. 300-foot-long chemical barges were lined up next to a waterfront park where families used to swim. Instead of the screeching of seagulls, residents heard ship engines churning and 18-wheelers grinding through narrow neighborhood streets. Tensions were especially high in the Lakeview Homes neighborhood, where Carolyn and Bobby Stone lived across the street from the river. They were among the handful of longtime residents who hadn't sold out to the barge companies.
Our neighborhoods are within just a few feet from a chemical cocktail of barges, lashed side by side all the way up and down the banks on both sides and in the middle of the river. Even first responders aren't aware of all the different chemicals that are in there. We have them literally at our front door, and we have no protections between us and them.
I'm David Leffler. From Public Health Watch, this is Fumed, an investigative podcast about the people who live in the shadows of America's chemical plants and oil refineries. This season, a group of stubborn Texans try to salvage what's left of their working class community. That's a problem, though, because they live in East Harris County, where the petrochemical industry calls the shots. In this episode, two of those stubborn people, Carolyn Stone and Greg Moss, are clinging to the faint hope that someone will step up to save what remains of the Channelview they once knew. But as the years pass, they begin to realize that if nobody else is going to step in, maybe they'll have to. Part 3, Birth of the Activists. Channelview's changing landscape was on everyone's mind. Most of the conversations over coffee at Mom's Country Cafe, dinner at El Tejano, or beers at the Starlight Bar had the sting of resignation to them. What was the point of fighting back? Channelview is unincorporated, so its 40,000 or so residents didn't have a mayor or city council to lobby for them. There weren't any big community organizations either. In times of hardship, people just banded together and took care of each other. The VFW organized barbecue benefit dinners. The school district held food drives and distributed bottled water. But that informal support system was no match for the politically connected petrochemical industry that was swallowing up their community, lot by lot. What worried people most was the army of barges invading Channelview. By the spring of 2007, more than 50 barges were parked along the mile-and-a-half stretch of river that borders Carolyn's neighborhood. Others were clustered near the Interstate 10 bridge that separates North and South Channelview. The first time I saw the barges, I was astounded by their size.
They're 11 feet tall. And keep in mind the barges are constructed around these big kind of metal bases.
that, you know, are pretty worn. They're cracked and rusting. But then on top of the actual kind of that shell itself is where all of the kind of chemical storage infrastructure is on it.
They were as long as football fields and rose roughly 15 feet above the water. But once they're fully loaded, they're practically submerged. Some barges have flat tops covered with a maze of pipes and valves. Others have what look like giant propane tanks on their tops. They were completely silent, but that silence didn't mean they weren't dangerous. Because barges store and transport highly combustible chemicals, they have to release, or vent, chemical vapors into the air. That keeps them from turning into chemical-filled pressure cookers. Clean air experts later told me that even a nearly empty barge can release chemicals into the air. That's because leftover chemicals can stick to its interior walls and accumulate at the bottom of its huge storage tank. Eventually, that gunk releases toxic vapors. I've been to Channelview a lot since then. I'm no longer shocked when I see a fleet of barges on the San Jacinto. But imagine having 50 barges bunched together in a narrow stretch of river across the street from your house. That's what Carolyn was facing and what Greg was trying to avoid. Carolyn was also worried about the industrial facility at the end of her street. It was now a chemical distribution and barge cleaning business owned by a Houston-based company, K-Solve. And it was expanding. Nearly two dozen chemical storage tanks sat at its center. Tanker trucks loaded with hazardous materials rumbled into the neighborhood. Barges were parked on the property's eastern bank. But Carolyn was so focused on her first grandchild that she pretty much ignored the K-Sol facility.
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, when he was born, to me, everybody says this, but he was perfect. It was such an experience to see him born and then to take care of him and help my daughter out.
Her daughter would drop off her grandson and they'd play in the backyard for hours.
We got him a little, one of those play Jeeps. Got a picture of him. He's got the hood open, working on it. So, in his diapers, you know. So it was fun, and he liked the plants, so he would help me out in the garden.
Being a grandmother reminded Carolyn why she'd moved into her home all those years ago. But on the afternoon of April 19th, 2007, Carolyn was reminded just how much Channelview had changed since those early days. A tanker truck at K-Solve burst into flames as it was being loaded with xylene, a highly explosive liquid found in paint thinners and coatings. A plume of smoke shot into the sky. Homes shook. Ash covered front yards and cars. Fire engines raced through South Channelview's narrow streets. The blaze was quickly extinguished, but the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, or TCEQ, later reported that chemicals were released into the air for more than 24 hours. A K-Solve spokesperson told me the fire was caused by an employee who didn't follow company policy. They said that after the accident, new technology was installed and training was stepped up. Carolyn and Bobby were visiting their daughter in the Houston suburb of Atascocita when a neighbor called to tell them what happened. Their home was covered in debris, but it was still standing. Carolyn was grateful that her children had moved away from Channelview.
Our grandkids being at the house and stuff, it's like, well, is it really safe for you to be here? If they had been at our house when the incident occurred, I would have had them out of there so fast.
For the first time in her life, she wondered if she and Bobby should leave too.
There was some things we were going to do to the house and stuff. And it was like, okay, do we spend the money on the house or do we start trying to save that money so we can get the hay out of here?
But she brushed that feeling aside. This was her home. She was there first. Why should she have to leave?
Barges had also moved closer to the river bottom, the marshy, overgrown piece of Northeast Channelview where Greg Moss lived. There were few things Greg loved more than walking down to the river on a quiet morning or feeling the cool spray of water on his face when he took a boat out on the San Jacinto. But those meditative moments on the water became rare after the 1994 flood that ruptured a pipeline and set the river on fire. So many people had stopped boating near the river bottom that he decided to retire from the boat repair business for good.
When I first got here on a Sunday afternoon, there's so many trucks and trailers. It would take you 30 or 40 minutes to get your boat in or out of the water. There was a huge difference in the amount of boat traffic before and after the 94 flood on this river. Huge difference, down to about a third.
Greg had hoped the I-10 bridge would act as a sort of barrier and stop the river bottom from becoming a barge depot, the way Carolyn's neighborhood had. And for many years, it did. But by the summer of 2014, dozens of barges were parked at a small shipyard just north of the bridge.
You don't know what's on them things. And these barges, they got the same chemicals they got in them damn refineries. It could be full of something that's explosive. And if they have an accident, it blows up. There's houses right there. You know, there's people right there.
Greg couldn't stop thinking about how vulnerable his world had become. Flooding in the river bottom was only getting worse. What would happen if a barge broke loose and hit the bridge? Or dumped a load of chemicals into his neighborhood? Or, even worse, started another river fire? After the 94 flood and fire, Greg bought a small plot of land about a quarter mile from the San Jacinto. His manufactured home, his workshop filled with tools, the abandoned dogs he took in, they were all there. Thanks to some savings, a little money he'd inherited from his dad, and disability benefits from his time in the Air Force, everything he owned was paid for. Still, if disaster struck, if another fire roared through the river bottom and veered onto his land, Greg would be in trouble. He didn't have fire or flood insurance for his manufactured home. And he didn't have enough money to start over. He was vulnerable, and he knew it.
There's a lot of things that can happen that I could lose my ass on. I'm just looking at the bay and the Gulf and all that and hoping we don't have any more hurricanes because I can't take another hit. I just can't afford it. You know, I can't afford anymore.
I saw Greg whenever I went to Channelview.
Hey, Greg, how you doing?
We talked a lot under the buzzing lights of his workshop about his brief tenure as a married man.
It was only like 3 years, but because the military's not nowhere for anybody to be married.
About life in general.
You gotta have fun in life. You only get to do one thing one time. You can't just sit around and say, well, I wish I'd have done it. You might as well just go do it.
Sometimes we'd eat together. Sometimes we'd sit outside his house while my dog, Deanie, chased squirrels.
They're muscadines.
Can I eat that?
Well, yeah, get one of the purple ones, the darker purple ones. All my friends come over here and
wow, that's great.
We've been making jelly and moonshine and wine and all that stuff.
Or we just stand in parking lots and talk for hours. On one of my visits, Greg brought up something I hadn't heard about before. There were two toxic waste pits just down the river from his home. One pit is a bit south of the I-10 bridge. The other is just north of the bridge, about a mile from Greg's house, and less than 2,000 feet from the rapidly expanding barge shipyard that was worrying him. The pits contained sludge that an old paper mill dumped there in the 1960s. And the sludge contained dioxin. Dioxin can cause cancer. It can also cause reproductive problems, damage the immune system, and interfere with the hormonal system, leading to thyroid disease, diabetes, and developmental disorders in children. Dioxin is best known for its connection to Agent Orange, which the U.S. infamously used during the Vietnam War.
The deadly chemical dioxin in Agent Orange
Just the name of it evokes all sorts of horrible images.
It was one way we were going to win the Vietnam War, dump herbicides all over the jungle so the Viet Cong would come out and fight.
The paper mill originally dumped its waste on land. But over time, the northern pit was submerged by the San Jacinto's rising waters. Dioxin began leaking into the river where people swam, into the fish, crab, and shrimp they ate, and into the wells that some families relied on for drinking water. It wasn't until 2008 that the pits were designated a federal Superfund site. That's a big deal. Superfund sites are hazardous waste areas identified by the federal government as some of the most toxic places in the country.
An alarming discovery by the EPA, Superfund site along the San Jacinto River contaminated with toxic chemicals. The toxicity is reaching levels well above what's considered safe.
The Superfund site, loaded with 17,000 truckloads of dioxin waste.
At first, the news that there was a Superfund site nearby didn't make much of a ripple in Channelview.
When we were younger, we used to go ride three-wheelers and four-wheelers and things down there. And we had no idea what it was. And then all of a sudden, the EPA was turning it into a Superfund site. Nobody ever told us nothing.
Greg didn't hear about the waste pits until 2011, when a TV news story announced that Harris County was suing the old paper mill and other responsible parties. A few weeks later, a friend told him the EPA was holding public meetings.
And he says, how come you don't go to those EPA meetings? I said, what EPA meetings? So he says, the ones about the waste pit, the ones down there at the end of the river bottom.
We have one lady back here.
By 2014, Greg was a regular at those Superfund meetings.
Hi, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
For those of you that don't know me, my name is Jackie Young. I work out here.
He was inspired by Jackie Young, a woman from Highlands, a small community on the other side of the river. She lived even closer to the pits than Greg did, and she believed her debilitating health problems, seizures, hair loss, painful lesions all over her body, were linked to the Superfund site.
She'd get up in front of the EPA and scream and yell at them and all that and tell them they want to do these tests and that test and all that. She's going to get something done. She's a little girl, you know. I wouldn't expect her to take on the management from the EPA, but she was kind of fearless.
So we trust you, and you guys are misleading these people.
The more Greg learned about the waste pits, the angrier he got. The stories he'd heard for years about sick neighbors and entire families battling cancer suddenly made sense.
A friend of mine had three grandchildren, no history of thyroid problems. And now, how did three kids get thyroid cancer? Little kids. How did three little kids end up with thyroid cancer? How did one family, both parents and one of the sons, die from cancer? And they lived kitty corner to the ones grandkids with thyroid cancer. And it's not just the luck of the draw, you know? I mean, there's something in the environment that caused that stuff.
Greg's biggest fear used to be that a barge would come careening down the river during a storm and dump chemicals into the water near his home. Now he had something new to worry about. What if a runaway barge rammed into the Superfund site and released dioxin, plus its own load of chemicals into the river?
The Channel View woman charged with hiring a contract murderer to kill the mother of a middle school cheerleader is out on bond today.
In July of 2014, something happened that put Channel View in the national headlines for the first time since the early 90s. That's when Wanda Holloway, a.k.a. the Pom Pom Mom, tried to hire a hitman to boost her daughter's chances of making the high school cheer team. This time, the spotlight was on a gun-toting senior citizen, angry about the barges moving into her neighborhood.
A 90-year-old grandmother clutching her shotgun as SWAT teams prepared to move in. That gun was loaded, and construction workers nearby told police she kept aiming it at them. She'd done it before, but today was different.
Yep, a 90-year-old woman with a shotgun.
What would make a 90-year-old grandma threaten violence? Neighbors say it's because she's fighting for her home. Barge construction companies surround her small house. Negotiators and SWAT teams had to move in, convinced her to drop the gun, rushed along the side of the house, and took her into custody.
Eloise Adcock had lived on Lakeside Drive for 46 years. Her riverfront home was just a few houses down from Carolyn's. Mrs. Adcock had always been a quiet woman. But watching her serene neighborhood become a chemical dumping ground, seeing her longtime neighbors sell out to barge companies, and the constant barrage of noise finally drove her over the edge.
Yeah, she's the last holdout. She just don't want to sell. Her husband built that house, and you know that's where she wants to stay.
Carolyn didn't know Mrs. Adcock well, but she'd watched barge companies snatch up properties on both sides of the old woman's home.
When all that commotion's going on each side of her, trucks running pretty much 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I know our house was rattling and shaking and stuff from construction. I can only imagine what she was putting up with. My feelings is they were doing it on purpose to try to run her off her property, to get her to sell them their property.
Greg felt for the old woman too. He'd watched barge companies swarm into South Channelview, and he wanted to make sure the same thing didn't happen near him. But Greg was a bit of a lone wolf. He couldn't see himself working on committees or organizing people. And he didn't trust government, any kind of government, to help ordinary people like him and his friends.
Whoever has the money is who the government seems to listen to. These big companies, they know who to pay. And that's where a lot of people don't trust the government anymore.
Every once in a while, Greg thought about just leaving the river bottom, getting out while he could. But the more Superfund meetings he sat through, the more he realized that, like it or not, he was going to have to do something to help his community. Instead of moving, he decided to stay and fight in his own rough style. As I've said before, Greg is one of a kind. In a place like Channelview, where handshake deals are binding and news travels fastest through gossip, that matters. His bright white hair and mustache make him stand out physically, and his tendency to stop and talk with everyone makes him well known around town. Greg also has a lot of time on his hands. He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he rarely stays up past 9, and he's always up by sunrise. So he decided to make himself a bullhorn in the fight against the barges and the waste pits. In his words, he became, quote, that asshole who'd keep talking until you listened. I saw Greg in action at El Tejano, a beloved Tex-Mex spot where he's a regular. Big grin on his face, voice booming as he talked over the TV blaring behind us. The waitress, Anna, knew his order by heart.
What does Greg normally have?
Chicken, whatever chicken, potato, tacos.
But he also always has a pink lemonade?
Yeah, yes.
Big glass of pink lemonade and pollo a la parrilla. She called him Greggy.
If I don't come, she threatens to call me up.
He pulled neighbors aside wherever he went, like the man he lovingly referred to as Junkyard Joe, and another who simply went by the mayor.
That's a good nickname. Do you call him that, Junkyard Joe?
Yeah. Everybody calls him Junkyard Joe.
Greg also posted announcements on Facebook about EPA meetings, news articles, and Jackie Young's tireless work. He always made the same point. The people of Channelview needed to band together before it was too late.
I wanted it cleaned up so no more little kids get hurt. I mean, a kid should grow up and have fun and live a good life. They shouldn't be hooked up to a machine 4 or 5 times a week to cleanse their blood. You know, they shouldn't die when they're 22 years old.
Greg did something else, too. Something that, looking back on it, made him some powerful enemies. For months, he'd been playing with drones, fitting them with GoPro cameras. He'd always loved photography, and using the new technology was fun. But by 2015, the drones were part of his crusade. He monitored the waste pits from above and documented the movement of the barges,
that were inching closer to the pits and to the river bottom. Some of his friends thought he was wasting his time. They figured that no matter what Greg found, nothing would change. That regulators, in particular the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, didn't care about the people without money or connections. Greg's friends felt like they were expendable. Other friends warned of something more ominous, that Greg was going to piss off the barge companies that were snatching up land across the river bottom. There's one more thing you should know about Greg. He doesn't shrink from big moments. He lives for them. The man is an adrenaline junkie, a self-described speed freak. Drag racing cars, drag racing boats. He craves the tension that grips his body when he's wrestling nature behind the wheel of a powerful machine.
When that green light turns on, your adrenaline goes sky high. You know, it's something you really got to experience to understand. I mean, you just can't explain it. But the most powerful drug in the world is a green light.
That same fearlessness fueled Greg's fight against the barges. He ignored his friends' warnings. He kept flying his drones.
You have to document things. If you don't document it, people can deny it. If you got something on picture, they cannot deny it. Hopefully, if you have enough problems documented with the barges, they have to go out and fix it.
Next time on Fumed, a barge company sets out to build its headquarters across the street from Carolyn's house, threatening what little peace she has left.
They had the street lined with equipment Monday morning before daybreak, and they went in and they mowed everything down. They mowed all the trees down and the residential houses down as quickly as they could, so they destroyed everything.
Fumed is a production of Public Health Watch. It was written and reported by me, David Leffler. Additional reporting by Savannah Strott and Selena Arredondo. Susan White was my editor. Our executive producer was Jordan Goss-Poré. Our senior producer was Selena Arredondo. Savannah Strott was an assistant producer. Yana Cholakovska and Jordan Goss-Poré provided additional research. Our music was composed and performed by Michael Ramos. Additional music by Epidemic Sound. Mark Bush was our sound engineer. Fact checking by Enna Alvarado. Artwork by Matthew Fleming. Special thanks to our distribution partners at Texas Public Radio and to the Texas Tribune for studio and technical support. Also, thanks to Joanne Farian, Lynn Perry, and Chris Worthington for their advice and encouragement. Jim Morris is the executive director and editor-in-chief of Public Health Watch. To see pictures of Carolyn and Greg and learn more about Channel View, go to fumedpodcast.com.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Fumed and other Texas Matters programs at tpr.org, and download us wherever you find a cool podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.